We're going to be taking some things a little out of order today from the schedule because we have our external auditor here to give the audit report. So we're going to work with her time to let her go immediately. But first, do we have anyone from the high school or from the middle schools here, the students to present? Okay. So before we get to you, Mary Ann, you may notice that Ms. Giras is sitting next to me, so we're going to give a little update on what's going on and why that's the case.
I'm not going to take it too personally that there's not that many people in the audience tonight. I do want to give everyone an update regarding Dr. Lewis. As I hope most of you know, Dr. Lewis has been out for the past 2 weeks. She was unfortunately involved in an accident while crossing the street on Yom Kippur. She broke her hip and her ankle on opposite sides of her body. She was immediately transported to the hospital and is receiving very good care at this point in time. She had a hip surgery, and she just this, I want to say Friday, had ankle surgery. She is going to a rehab facility tomorrow and is healing very well considering what she endured. She is so very appreciative of the cards, well wishes, and especially the thoughts and prayers. To reassure all of you, she's very much involved in the day-to-day happenings in the district and running the organization. She is on call with all of the assistant superintendents. She was just actually involved in our executive session, and she still has her sense of humor and her wits about her, considering all that's going on. But again, I just, on behalf of Dr. Lewis, I just want to thank all of you for keeping her in her thoughts and prayers, and she expects to recover pretty quickly. And we're going to make sure that we're doing our part on our end to make sure that the organization runs as best as possible in her absence.
So on October 1st, yet another horrific tragedy took place on the campus of Umpqua Community College in Oregon. As a nation, we grieve for those who've lost their lives and the families who lost their loved ones and a community that lost a sense of peace that day. Since the shootings of Sandy Hook, there's been 142 shootings at schools across our country. This has started to become a pattern that I can't imagine anyone being okay with. Plainview with Page has been proactive with security changes and advancements since the Sandy Hook incident, bringing in Homeland Security. However, we need to do more to protect our staff, children, community, and our country. Enough is enough. Our president made a plea to consider that whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, to consider representative stance on gun control when voting on and decide whether this cause of continuing death for innocent people should be a relevant factor. We need more strict gun laws. I'm asking our legislative committee of our board to help in writing to our legislators and demand change for the safety and well-being of all staff, students, communities, and our nation. I'd like to take this opportunity to have a moment of silence.
Any other board announcements? Ginger.
This past weekend on Sunday, the Chamber of Commerce had a craft fair at the library, and it was so well attended. And our high school kids all sang a cappella. They entertained for probably close to 45 minutes. They were absolutely fabulous. And just to thank the students that came on their own time, their parents were there. And it was just a breath of fresh air after a really bad Saturday. And for all the families that enjoyed the day, we just want to thank the Chamber of Commerce for all that they've done.
All All right. Since no one from the high school's here, I'll jump in. Homecoming, we played the game, but the ceremonies got rained out. So they're going to be rescheduled for, I believe, October 16th, which is going to be a Friday Night Lights game. So they're going to work it out with the Under the Lights. Should be a fun experience for everyone. And hopefully the weather will be a whole lot nicer with no threatened hurricanes coming through. Right. We did win 42-0, so... It was on that side, we were very victorious, but the weather was not cooperating this past weekend. I have a board announcement. Last week, we went to the board resolutions meeting with the Nassau-Suffolk BOCES, and it wasn't as well attended as it's been in the past, but what was very interesting was there was a lot of very, very good dialogues about a lot of the proposals and places to go, and the Plainview Old Bethpage contingent was very well represented with some thoughts of our own, and afterwards... Well, afterwards, several people from within NISBA, the organization, came and said, you know, you guys should come up with your own proposed amendment, and let's see if, you know, you can propose that at the convention. Nothing's done. So we've done just that when we get to our NISBA resolution discussions later. But we did, I believe there's copies available for people to see the resolutions that we're going to attempt to amend to have them be what we feel is more in line with the needs of our district and districts like ours. So, that should be a good discussion when we get to it, because it was at the meeting, and I'm sure we'll have some good points to go over also. Also, Mr. Greenberg's running a little late, but he will be here. Okay. Like I said, we might be – do you have any superintendent's announcements?
I was just going to do homecoming.
Okay. Who won the battle of the – oh, we didn't do it, right?
Mm-mm.
So never mind. Okay. Marion Van Dyme's here. She's from our external auditors, R.S. Abrams. She's going to give us a report on the financial statements and the audit. We take this out of order because we know her time is valuable, and she actually got here about 45 minutes earlier than she thought. So you don't have to fill all 45 minutes. Just wanted to let you know that. But you're up. And just, Rich, we will be putting the financial statements on the district website if they're not already, right,
yes,
in the very near future? Great.
Okay. Let's get this on the projector. Rich, I have, is this supposed to be up there? Okay. Yes. Can we do a song and a dance? Something doesn't seem right. There we go. Up. Playing tricks on us. All right, I think we're good. Okay, well, thank you for inviting me to present the results of the audit. We actually met with the audit committee last week. And we went into the audit in detail. I think we went through the financials for at least an hour and a half. You do have an audit committee made up of community members as well as board members. And I think it's a great committee. They asked a lot of good questions, so we went over the financials. We do two separate audits when we come in. One being the GASB audit, which is the larger document that you received in your board packet. And then also the extra classroom audit. In both cases, you received an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion you can get as a district. Before I go into the PowerPoint, I wanted to thank Rich and Jen. They're both here for the first time doing the audit. I think they did a great job. You came right in the crux of everything. So you never know how it's going to go. But I thought everything went very smoothly. Thank you for all your help.
Mm-hmm. So just as we were finishing the fiscal year, the board had just adopted the budget, then we quickly went to closing the books in July. So, yes,
yeah,
it's been an exciting time.
You're probably glad this is over. Now you have the budget to look forward to. Yes, I know. So basically, this PowerPoint is just an overview of what we talked about in the audit committee. So like I said, with both audits, you received an unmodified opinion,
which is the best opinion you can get as a school district. We also, as part of the audit, look at your internal controls. There was no material weaknesses in the internal controls. We do have a management letter included in your packet, which is recommendations that we always make to improve the controls you have, but there was nothing material that we wanted to bring to your attention. These are considered other matters, which I'll address in the next couple of slides. So all in all, I think you have very strong controls, but like I said, we always come up with new and additional controls that you can put into place. We also look at your financial position. What we'd like to look at is different ratios to see if you have a strong financial position. One of the ratios that we do look at is your current ratio, which is basically your current assets over your current liabilities. Your district has a 2.71-to-1 ratio, which is a strong ratio. The average is 2.5 for the state, so you are above the average with statewide school districts. Business office, like I said, was very cooperative throughout the whole audit. They had everything ready for us. All the books were closed. All the schedules were ready for us, and everything went smoothly. Okay, so it's also as part of the financial statement audit, we do look at controls. And there were three areas that we did make recommendations this year. One had to do with cash management, which had to do with bank statements. What we do is we confirm accounts, and there were some accounts that we needed to close out that some ancillary groups were using the ID number. So now I know that Rich took care of that and notified the bank, so those accounts have been closed out. The next area was the extra classroom reports, and we did note a couple of things, which was very minor. There were two clubs that had no activity, so what we like to do is have the district review the clubs because they can be operationally active, but not financially active. So we're just recommending to review those. If they're not active, to close them out to a board-designated club. And then the third recommendation had to do with receivables. We look at your receivables to make sure that they're current. You do have a summer school handicap program, which is a program funded by state grants. And there were some receivables that were 3 to 4 years old, I believe it was. It was 2011, 2012, and 2012 and 13. And generally, the money's come in very slow for this program from the state. So it's just a matter of monitoring it to make sure that those monies are coming in. And if they don't come in within the next year or two, then we would say write those receivables off. Okay, so really, those were the three areas that we had recommendations for within the management letter. Like I said earlier, these were not material weaknesses. They are just recommendations. Management actually was very proactive in implementing our prior year recommendations. If you look in the management letter, we also include status of prior year, and all the recommendations from last year were implemented. So it shows you that, you know, the district takes our recommendations seriously, and we'd like to see that everything is implemented. Okay, so that was the management letter. The next thing I want to go over is there was one change this year with the financial statement where there was a new implementation of GASB 68, which is a little bit different from what you had last year. Now you're required to report the long-term liability for TRS and ERS, okay? This has nothing to do with your budget, doesn't have anything to do with your general fund. It's your long-term balance sheet, the district-wide balance sheet that this impacted. And fortunately enough, the teacher's retirement system is actually 112% funded. So that actually helped your net position on your financial statements. And the employee retirement system is about 98% funded. So New York actually is much better shape than a lot of the other states. New Jersey is about 50% funded. So this is really a new reporting requirement that you had to implement this year. The footnote disclosure is very involved. There is also a new required supplementary information that we put in the back of the audit report, which is a nice 10-year trend of your teacher's retirement system expense over time. So you can see how that expense has increased dramatically over the last 10 years. And this is really out of your control. It's based on teachers' the rates times the teacher's retirement system times the salaries. So you get these rates every year, and you have to budget for them. Fortunately, in 15-16, the TRS rates did go down, but if you look at the schedule from the last 10 years, it dramatically increased over since 2005 up until 2015. Same with the employer's retirement system. So that's an additional schedule that you do have on the audit this year. These are some new standards that we will be implementing over the next couple of years. Two of them are for next year, and then one of them is for 2018. So it's something, there isn't anything dramatic in these standards. I don't think it's going to be a big change from last year, but it is something that we're going to have to address. Okay, then as far as the financial statements, we like to do an overview of the financial statements. And this primarily focuses on your general fund. Your unassigned fund balance, which is limited to 4% of next year's budget, was at that level. So you were at the 4% this year for unassigned fund balance. And essentially, that fund balance is really for any shortfalls in revenues or any unanticipated expenditures. It would come out of that unassigned fund balance. So you are at that maximum 4%. The other component of general fund is your designated for subsequent years taxes. This is where you appropriate fund balance to lower your taxes in the next year. So this year you did appropriate over $2.6 million from this year's fund balance to fund the 15-16 budget. The other big change this year with regards to fund balance was you did transfer $5 million from your capital reserve over to your capital fund, and this was voter approved for all the capital projects that were approved in the voter referendum. So that did come out of your fund balance in the general fund this year. Okay? Then overall, the financial health, we like to look at that. Like I said, you do have a very good financial health, and really the reasons behind that was really due to the continued leadership of the board. The district also uses a lot of cost-effective purchasing procedures, so by doing that, you are getting the best price when you go out for purchasing, whether it's through cooperative bidding, whether it's the BOCES contracts. The purchasing agent is very focused on trying to get the best return for your expenses. Also, strategic use of BOCES services. By using BOCES services, you do get additional aid. So the district really utilizes that BOCES component as much as you can. Commitment to funding reserves, really to put monies into reserves for long-term impacts, and really that'll help you to fund future budgets in the future. So that's important to make sure you're prepared for any future increases in any of those types of expenditures. Improved curriculum and community support is another area that we felt was the reason for your overall financial health this year. Okay. And what this slide kind of just talks a little bit about why is financial health so important. It assists with the tax levy. So by having a strong financial portfolio, it'll help you with the cap and being able to manage the tax levy cap. Cash flow-wise, it improves your cash flow so you don't have to borrow as much. Your interest costs do go down because you do have a stronger balance sheet. Improving your credit rating. There are some districts out there that I actually just came from one where the credit rating will be downgraded because they're using their reserves so quickly. So that is something, just to keep in mind that there are, they are focusing a lot on a stagnant or an improved balance sheet. So it's really important to have that for the credit rating agencies. Also, like I said earlier, it funds unbudgeted contingent expenditures. If you have any expenses that come up that you're not anticipating, that does come out of your fund balance, so it's important to have that unassigned fund balance for those types of situations. State aid shortfalls, if you have any state aid shortfalls, that also has an impact. And then by having a strong financial health, you're preserving your existing programs and opportunities for the students so you don't have to cut programs because you do have a strong balance sheet. Okay. And that's my overview. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could clarify what you meant when you were talking about the, I'm sorry, let me get to the right.
The summer handicap.
Yeah, it's the management letter. Yeah.
Okay.
If you could just clarify that. That's not the same as the summer spec ed program that we have.
No. Okay. This is a state-supported program where you get reimbursed from the state for transportation for any students in the summertime that go into that program, the summer school handicap program. So the general fund subsidizes 20% of the program, and the state will subsidize 80% of the program. So unfortunately, because the 80% comes in slower because the state takes a while to process the stack forms, that receivable tends to sit there for a few years. So it's just, we wanted just to bring it to your attention, just to monitor it, to make sure that you are getting the monies in. If not, then you may have to write it off. But it really is contingent on the state providing the monies.
Where historically has been our success rate with getting the money back?
It usually takes time. So it usually can take up to, say, 3 years, and you're at that mark right now. So next year, if you're still not getting money in, it would be a matter of evaluating, making sure the stack forms were filed properly, making sure that the 20% was adequate from the general fund, because if, say, your expenses are higher than you anticipated, maybe the general fund might have to kick in more than the 20%. So it's really just looking at those two areas to make sure that there isn't anything to be concerned about. But like I said, most districts have older receivables for this program, but just to bring it to your attention, just to monitor it in the upcoming year. Okay.
I just want to be clear, that is our summer special ed program where students are transported to the program.
Yes, yes.
Marian, as you're aware, we got a not-so-glowing report from the New York State Auditor, Controller. But when you look at this financial statement, you can see that there is some inherent conflicts between the guidance that we're given as the guidelines of where our reserves can be.
Right.
The financial strength of the district, which you clearly show is extraordinary,
mm-hmm.
and then the, I'll say, political will of where some of these controller reports come from. Can you just speak to that conflict from your point as an external auditor and what the challenges are facing districts and mm-hmm. what some of the results are sometimes when districts do follow those guidelines?
Right. Well, I think the first thing is districts need to have guidelines, which your district does have. You do have a fund balance policy. You revisit that every year just to see if where you want to be reserve-wise. The key is making sure your reserves are within the legal limits, they are within the legal limits. So unfortunately, because you are being conservative, but you are within the legal rights, the state is really criticizing school districts because they really have to potentially start cutting some state aid for school districts. So that's really one of the reasons why they feel that they need to target in on reserves at school districts to say that, you know, these districts have monies into reserves. So this is, you know, a justification on why we may potentially have to lower aid. On the other coin is that I do have districts that are being written up for fiscal stress where they're spending down their reserves too quickly. So there's, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons of you don't want to spend down your reserves too quickly because then you will be criticized by the state for doing that. So my advice to the school districts is just to reevaluate your plan, your fund balance plan. Look at the current conditions on whether you need monies in certain reserves because every year things change. So, for instance, the employee retirement system rates, if they're going down, then you may want to utilize those reserves to come down a little bit more than what you have. So it's just constantly revisiting what you have balance sheet-wise. The Moody's and the credit rating agencies, they are really focusing on fund balance and reserves and a strong balance sheet because they know a lot of districts are spending down their fund balance very severely to keep their taxes at a good level or to keep within the cap. So I've had districts that have been downgraded because of that, and now what's happening is that they have to pay more for their borrowings. Their ratings are going down. Their interest costs are going up. So, you know, it's going to impact you negatively if you go that route. So really what you want to do is just make sure that you do keep monitoring your plan, making sure that it's reasonable, and you do support all your reserves. You have support for why you have monies in reserves. So I think as a district, I would continue doing that and making sure that every year, you know, you readdress it and adjust as you go along.
I want to apologize. We invited the audit committee to be here, but we thought Mary Ann would be here closer to 9, which was the time she thought she would be here. So when the audit committee members come, if they'd like to speak, we're going to give them a chance to come up to the microphone to give you their impact on the review as community members who are involved in that. Rich, do you have anything else to add to this?
I just want to, with the dialogue about OSC's audit and what we're seeing in our audited financial statements. And I had a conversation, I had a phone call today from Gabe DeMeo, who's the deputy controller in the Division of School Accountability. And when our audit report first came out, Dr. Lewis and a couple of other superintendents in districts who got the same exact report sent correspondence to Mr. DiNapoli asking for a meeting to discuss OSC's stance. And we had a very nice conversation, but what he really called to say is, sorry, but there won't be a meeting because you know we'll never meet on these issues. And the audit is the audit. And he said, you know the audit is the audit, and you know the format of the audit, and, you know, that's where it's going to lie, and we hope you use it as a tool and move forward from it. So it's very, I think, easy to latch on to certain information and try and figure out, well, where are they coming from? But one of the other things that Mr. DeMeo said is really what we're hoping you do in the long run is to continue to use this audit, financial statements, and other information and planning tools to support your program and keep your taxpayers in mind. And he said if we could distill it down to a paragraph in any audit, that's all we really want you to do. However, we have a format, and the audit is the audit, and that's never going to change. And he said, and if you go back in time, and this is true, if you go back 20 years, same audit reports are being used. So not much has changed with that approach. But he was happy to know that the district is using the tools of OSC. He was aware that I had reached out to our regional office and started using some of their tools. And that's all they're really looking for. But they also are very aware of the district's financial position and the decisions of the board, and they understand why you go in that direction and expect you to continue to go in that direction.
Good job to all involved. NISBA resolutions. We ready to start tackling that, guys? All right. There's many of them. A couple of things on that. Like I expressed to the community before, we went to the NISBA, the Nassau-Suffolk meeting. There were a lot of discussions. Some of the discussions that we discussed had to do with the fact that we need to advocate for laws to be changed and laws to be done correctly on some of the issues that are hotbed issues for us. So you'll see out at the side, we have a sample of a letter that we'll be sending off to our legislators. And I'm going to make that available for the PTAs and the community as well to send off, because the only way this is really going to get fixed is if our elected officials really stand up to the governor and do what's right by our kids. So we all want to lobby to do that if we can. And just as a quick update segueing from that, I think the community is aware that we sent a letter about the Common Core Regents and some things that we weren't very happy with. And we got back a letter from the state that basically said, thank you for the letter, and nothing's going to happen. So you're welcome. So that's just the update on where that stands. And I wish I could go into more detail, but we don't know if we can or can't based on the letter came under a cloak of confidentiality. But once we figure out from legal whether we could share it or not, our goal will be to share that response if we're allowed to with the community. Okay, NISBA resolutions. There is a copy of the check sheet list. That's said completely wrong. There's a checklist sheet up there where we'll go through the resolutions on in order of what they are and where we are. And there's also copies of the resolutions that we're going to try to have influence over and have some amendments and wording changed at the actual convention itself. And as I said, we've been reached out by the members of the resolution committee group, and we'll be following their guidelines as best we can to have the best possible chance of success with that. Okay. There are a couple that I think are pretty simple where we really didn't disagree with anyone on, and that's one and two, right? The process, which is basically the fees for the year and technical change in the area designations, which doesn't affect lower New York. That's really in upstate New York, but we were all good with supporting, I believe. Well, we'll just vote.
Well, why don't you explain that Lauren's going to be our voting delegate?
Yes. Lauren, as we voted after a very hotly contested vote, I believe, is going to be our elected voting representative at the meeting on Tuesday, I believe it is, and she'll be voting the will of what this board comes up with for the issues and presenting the amendments that we're going to be proposing also. So the first two things were proposed bylaw amendments, which were recommended for adoption. Both were recommended by the Finance, Legal Committee, and the Executive Committee of NISBA. And at the resolutions dinner, they were also supported. Did we take a vote on each one? Discussion or vote on each one, right? We don't need a motion for every single one, right? That'll be ridiculous. So do we have any discussion on these? All those in favor? So that's one and two. Next was, we'll go through the process, was authorization funding of extension of academic year or school day. And that was supported by the Finance, Legislative, and the Executive Committee. Any discussions? Go.
So as I understand it, having been a general comment, having been the voting delegate last year, that these resolutions aren't to be treated the same as a piece of legislation. Just I think it's probably good to make that statement, and that is it's a general statement of NISBA's position, but it doesn't dictate the specific nitty-gritty details of how they should go about it. It's kind of like a general overview. This is the general position, the direction that the organization is going to support or oppose on certain issues. So then moving to this one, I support this resolution, but not because I support the extension, extending the length of the school year, but simply because I think it should be a local decision. And so for those districts throughout the state that do want to do it, they should have the ability to make that decision. And so while I support the resolution,
you're not suggesting it for us.
I'm not suggesting that I support it for POB. Just making it clear that voting in support of it doesn't mean that
we're
encouraging to do it here.
Anyone else? Comments? Nope. We're good. Who's in favor of that? Okay.
I'm processing.
I hear what Seth says, and I part of my brain agrees with you. Part of it doesn't. We want to be in a competitive society, and I get it, and we want to have individual control. However, we want to look upon other countries and mimic them as well. So I'm a little, I don't know, as a group when we were going to the, when we were at the dinner, we actually voted opposed.
Okay. Good, someone's keeping track of all that.
I it's my job. I fought for this position. I don't know. I don't know if I feel comfortable supporting it. I'm trying to find the right words. I, you know what? I have to get my thoughts together, but I don't know if I feel comfortable right now. So.
Well, you want us to circle back to this? We can.
Yeah, can we circle back to it?
No, not this one.
This wasn't it. This wasn't it. I have to go back to it because it was fresh in my head when I had read it for the dinner, but not now. Let me give it. Do you have a... No, I just need a second. But I don't remember being... Yeah. I need a minute to think about
this. I don't even remember the discussion on this one. I'm lost.
We did oppose it. I do understand what Seth is saying. However, in the age of, quote, increased rigor, we've seen some schools do some pretty awful things. We've seen them canceling kindergarten plays so that, you know, the kids can spend more time in the classroom doing worksheets. And I don't want to give schools financial incentive to have kindergartners sitting at their desks for 8 hours a day, or to have them come in on Saturdays, or to have them go to school through July. And while the majority of schools will do the right thing, I fear that there will be schools who will, you know, see that as sort of carte blanche to work these kids to death. That's my concern. I don't want to dangle money for those schools who are going to grab it to continue to work these kids into the ground. That's why I oppose this.
I remembered. I also don't want the state to give money to use, and then if they don't use it, take it away. So if we were talking about how state would give funding to use it to extend the day, and if they don't use it, take it away, and then take it away, and then we wouldn't see it.
Right. The bait and switch.
And I think we were also talking about, for that point, that there would be some districts that would really be getting a lot more money, and for those that didn't do it, there's no way they would give us the money in lieu of it, so we'd be losing money
right.
and almost being forced to do something we didn't want to do.
I would be more comfortable with it if they kind of put some guidelines in place. You know, if you wanted to extend the school day so you had extra help after school, or in, you know, less fortunate districts so that you could have a breakfast program in the morning before school starts.
Yeah, can you just speak into the microphone? Because this is a recorded board meeting.
Hey, now we're open for business 9 hours a day. Bring the five-year-olds in. Let's sit them at their desks from 9 to 5. I don't want to offer financial incentive to do something like that because there will be schools that'll push for something like that.
So, I mean, like, I share both of your views. I certainly don't support the things that you're suggesting that could be done with it. My point is simply that should be a local school district's decision. While I don't support it, if another school district and their elected officials decide they want to do that, that's up to that school district to make the decision. I don't want another school district from upstate coming and telling us how to run our district. I don't like the state doing that or the federal government doing that. I certainly don't want. So my point is, if there is flexibility that other districts are looking to have to do that, I don't want to be the one to stand in their way, just like I wouldn't want them to stand in the way in our. I don't support it, very clearly. I personally do not support the situation that you're describing or the extending of a school year. But this is talking in general terms to other flexibility that may not extend into the summertime or involve taking, you know, getting rid of kindergarten plays and whatnot. So, you know, I don't think you could use the exception to disprove the general rule, and I think that we're holding on to the most extreme examples, in my view, which is why I support it. I'm against extending it, but I support giving the authority. And if they want to do that, and they get aid in order to do that, that doesn't mean that we have to do that. And I get it. I get everything's about money, but at the end of the day, it's also up to each local district to make the determination. Because no matter how much money they get, it's going to cost them a lot more for the district to continue running the programs that they're going to do, and they're going to be responsible for that.
So all those, we'll just take it to a vote. And all those in favor of the resolution funding for extra extension of
academic year,
raise your hand. All those opposed? So that one passes by a narrow margin. Vote half-heartedly. The next one was one where we did have a lot of discussions on the floor at the meeting about it. Basically, the position of the resolution as stated, which comes from 2010, is resolved that the New York State School Boards Association, in conjunction with the New York State Board of Regents and New York State Department of Education, shall work collaboratively to modify the scheduling and frequency of state-administered standardized assessments. So the first point we made as a district was, obviously, we see how well that statement's worked in stopping this nonsense that's going on with all the testing. So there was also some proposed amendments that the school boards looked at, one of which was, I'm still on resolution two, but we'll come around to that. It was to express a no confidence in the current New York State testing system, right, which was an actual separate resolution put out as resolution 25, that then when 25 didn't get passed the rules committee or whoever it was, came back to being an amendment to resolution number two. Which also did. And when we discussed it as the group at the Nassau-Suffolk, it was, you know, the no confidence was something people had some issues with as being a little too extreme. So we kind of took it upon ourselves as the legislative group and to work on some wording that we thought might be more beneficial for school boards and school districts and children. And it's our resolution number two. Seth, could you read that? This is the amendment we're going to try to get proposed for the amendment to read as at the...
So we have both our amended proposal number two and rationale associated with it. Proposal number two, be it resolved that the New York State School Boards Association shall advocate for an overhaul of the current testing system to more accurately measure achievement in skills, knowledge, and abilities, and it shall do this by... A, working collaboratively with the New York State Board of Regents and the New York State Department of Education to create tests that are developmentally appropriate, of reasonable length and frequency, and which avoids the unintended consequences of narrowing the curriculum, teaching to the test, reducing love of learning, and undermining school climate. B, insisting that educators throughout the state be included in all aspects of the creation of standardized tests. And C, demanding that district personnel be permitted to examine test results, answer keys, and their students' responses so that educators can better assess what each child is learning in relation to what is being taught, and so that such tests can truly inform instruction. The rationale behind this is as follows. On the one hand, we believe restating a resolution which has not resulted in any movement and which has explicitly been ignored by the powers that be cannot effectuate meaningful change. On the other hand, we believe simply declaring no confidence in the testing system will similarly be inadequate, as it de-emphasizes the value of appropriate, accurate, and reliable standardized tests in preparing our children for their futures. Boards of education recognize the value of standardized tests as an objective and critical measure of achievement in skills, knowledge, and abilities. Testing, if done correctly and with educator involvement, provide teachers with important diagnostic information about what each child is learning in relation to what she is taught. Only in this way can teachers know if a student needs intervention or remediation. Only in this way can a district know if its curriculum matches course requirements. And only in this way can all educators know if the teaching methods needed are in some way lacking and require adjustment. The Department of Education, the Board of Regents, must work intimately and collaboratively with educators to create tests that will not hamper educators' efforts to focus on the broad range of learning experiences that promote the innovation, creativity, problem-solving, collaboration, communication, critical thinking, and deep subject matter knowledge that will allow students to thrive in a democracy and an increasingly global society and economy. Tests must truly inform instruction and be a tool for a teacher to use to diagnose a student's teaching needs. Further, tests should avoid the unintended consequences of labeling children or creating an overall atmosphere where competition breeds cheating. It takes a village to raise a child, goes an old and famous African proverb. That village is us, boards of education, educators, and other schools, staff, parents, and yes, even the State Education Department and Board of Regents. Let's work together to create a system that focuses more on raising a child to realize their full potential to be happy, ethical, and analytical citizens of the world. Some of this language, quite frankly, comes from a letter that we wrote, which is what I went back to, about a year and a half ago, about testing and about APPR, which we're going to be addressing later. So I didn't want to reinvent the wheel, and we just wanted to go back to something that this board has previously stated its position on. So just lifted it up from there to come up with a rationale.
There we go. one of the things that we didn't like about the old resolution was that the resolution itself didn't make clear that the existing system was broken. And here also, now nobody sees the rationale other than the voting, the people voting, right? Once it's a resolution, they only see the top part. Can we work some stronger language just into that resolution that basically makes it, because, you know, again, it was the existing resolution was just kind of like, hey, let's try something else, not, you know, the way we're doing things now simply is not working. And I'd like to, since nobody else is going to see the rationale other than the board members who are voting, I'd like the resolution itself to make it clear that, you know, the way things are being done now, just it's not working.
Doesn't the word overhaul the current testing system say that, you know, it needs to be fixed?
Well, again, going back to being the voting delegate, what they had described to us last year was simply, I mean, this is guiding them. This is guiding NISBA's actions. And what you're talking about, I think we all agree with, is including the rationale, but there is no whereas clauses. If there were whereas clauses to the resolution, it would be included in the whereas clause. This is simply to give NISBA guidance as to what it wants to. So, you know, what the position of the members are. So when it goes to advocate for us, and it speaks to State Education Department, Board of Regents, or whoever, legislators, whoever they speak with, they're going to say, hey, this is the direction that we've been given by our member groups, and here's the reason why we've been given this direction. We've been given this direction because they've collectively said, this system just doesn't work, and we need to change it. And so I agree with everything you're saying. I just don't know if – I mean, the idea is – you know, I think part of this is the idea is to try to get the entire NISBA group to go along with it. And I don't know if making simply a statement is itself a resolution. That's why you have the whereas as a rationale. I agree with you. I just don't know if the resolution itself is the place for it.
That actually mimics just what he said in broad strokes, the comments that I got from when I sent this to the person who reached out to me initially. Her biggest feedback was, it's not a matter of stating your case with the resolution. It's a matter of giving direction with the resolution. You use the rationale to state your case, correct? So I think overhaul of a current testing system is pretty strong language. If we could get that even through, I think it would be quite impressive.
I mean, to follow up, I mean, let's say, hypothetically, because it would be nice that we included, be it resolved that NISBA shall advocate for an overhaul of the current testing system, comma, a system that we find not to whatever, comma, to more accurately. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, add a little phrase in there.
A modifier.
Thank you, English. I don't know what that would be. But maybe would that address it?
Yeah, I think so.
Overhaul of the current testing system.
A word we could probably use.
Okay, so overhaul of the current testing system, one that we find inadequate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or the current inadequate testing system.
Overhaul of the current inadequate testing system.
Like that.
Yeah,
would that accomplish it? That's much more specific.
And now we don't have confusing commas.
Right. Yeah.
And that addresses your concern, but still delivers, hopefully,
the message.
Cool.
Okay.
And a little adjective shall lead them.
Well done. So we're all are we all good with this now? And we'll get that retyped up? Cool.
So
I think that for rationale, just so people are going to see it, we should use instead of I, we.
Yeah, we will.
And so then it should be he, she.
I didn't know if everyone agreed with me, so I didn't want to make that presumption.
Right. Cool. We'll turn them into we's and he, she's.
And we're going to change reds to breeds.
Oh, yeah. Breeds have cheating. Cool. Breeds cheating.
Breeds cheating. Breeds cheating.
Right.
The last paragraph.
The last right over here.
Breeds cheating.
Seth, can we take it on you that you'll make these changes and send it over to Jean so she can have them perfectly tomorrow?
Perfect.
Great.
So I guess for our position, it's support if amended?
Yes.
S-A?
Yes. Cool. We do as a group. Yeah. Right. So are we all good with support if amended as the amendment we proposed?
Yes.
Good. Do we have any that are easy? Three. Was that
Wait,
easy?
Just to make Lauren's life both easier and more difficult all at the same time, to the extent that the amendment doesn't get passed, what's our position? Oppose?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we're saying we're only going to support if it's amended.
All right. Okay. But so oppose.
Because
there's going to be other amendments and
whatnot. There was another amendment on here.
Right.
Washington.
There was one amendment saying, I believe, to include superintendents, administrators, and teachers. And that one, Nassau Suffolk supported that one, but the one that was no confidence, they didn't. And this came to the discussion that we had collectively amongst ourselves at our table and with the whole group, that to vote for, if none of these things that make the resolution meaningful go through, to vote for a resolution that obviously has had no meaning or impact, why would we do
it's
that?
Silly. It's a silly vote.
So
the Port Washington Amendment, all the Port Washington Amendment did was, oops.
Yep. Port Washington.
All that did was just sort of expand who was going to be involved in the process. It didn't change the sort of softness of the language.
Right.
Okay.
I'm okay with opposing it with the way it was written because I thought
too.
It was useless.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. Okay.
Okay, so Laura, you're getting down with you.
Number three, sharing of program services with public colleges and municipalities. I don't recall any controversies with that.
No.
Okay. So are we all good supporting that one? Okay. New York State assumed costs for tuitions of students at state schools for blind and deaf. I believe that one was, everyone was pretty much saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
Support.
Are we all good with that one?
Yes.
Okay. Prohibit governor from including non-fiscal measures in executive budget.
Strongly supported.
Yes.
Yes. This one had a lot of chatter of which everyone said yes, sooner the better.
Exactly.
Modify ACA penalties on employers for health insurance premiums that exceed benchmarks. Right. The reason for the opposition to that was that it's not that school districts need exemptions from the law. The law needs to be made to work better and not have these kind of penalties for people who have it out of their control, which was why we were opposing it. So if we're still good opposing it, as we were at the dinner table, are we opposing it?
I'm sorry.
Discussion?
Could you explain the distinction that you're making?
This was trying to get just an exemption for schools alone to the ACA Act for having to have mandatory health insurance and the fact that we could be accidentally pushed beyond and into Cadillac plans based on just increasing costs and where we are. And the opposition was based on, no, we shouldn't oppose getting our own exemption, but we should oppose that part of the act to be more broadly defined, to be fairer to.
I mean, the way I read it, and I know I wasn't at the resolutions dinner, it wasn't just applicable to school districts, it was for everybody. I mean, it was employers, just the employer, so it wasn't just advocating for an exemption for school districts.
Well, I think we missed that. Did we?
Thank you, sir.
Because when we were talking about it, I'm pretty sure we were saying it looked like it was just for schools, right?
Yes, I think this was a close call vote.
Right.
But wait, then it refers to in the case of school districts.
Right. They're explaining why you're talking about it.
Right.
But it actually, they're pushing for everybody.
Yeah. We need to have Seth at all these legal discussions. So how do we want to vote on this? It's very simple. Are we now comfortable supporting this based on that it's for all? Mm-hmm. We got tied up in the rationale, I think, rather than the overall proposal. But there was discussions on the floor about it, too.
Yeah.
So we're now supporting that measure? Is everyone comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Okay. 7 was reform current legal notice publication requirements. I don't think there was much controversy on that. That was basically saying that things are beyond newspapers now, and we need to accept that there are other ways of communicating with the general public.
Right. Yep.
All those supporting that? 8 was grant public schools same exemptions from law regulation as given charter schools. This one had some very almost heated discussions about it from a lot of different people because of the concept being, as some people brought up, well, why would we advocate that because charter schools can have non-certified staff, we should have non-certified staff. That's not in the interest of the kids and everyone. You know, what we should really do is see that they have to abide by those rules that we do, not the other way around. So our table was pretty solid in opposing that because of the way that was written.
This was one of those that they had 2 or 3 counts on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The vote, that's how close it was.
It was like 12, 13, or 14, by 11 one or whatever. So it was really close. So are we okay with opposing that based on that reason?
Yeah.
Okay. Delay effective dates of new laws and regulations. There were discussions about it, but I think at the end everyone supported it. I'm not going to say I'm right. What was the amendment? I think we supported the amendment. Can you? That was a good amendment, right? We like that one? Oh, the amendment was to say, notwithstanding the above, in event of emergency situation, laws and regulations can use a short timeline if they are fully funded to each school district involved. And they gave examples of something like, you know, Sandy that came through and other things that are beyond everyone's control.
Yep.
So we're for that amendment and we're for the amendment.
Yeah.
We're for the proposal and we're for the amendment.
Yes.
And we're for the proposal even without the amendment, but we like the amendment.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Required design, number 10. Well, this one obviously was very heated also. Mm. Okay. Next one was require the APA process that informs instruction and promotes student learning. This was one that was also very contested. There was a separate, the resolution itself that was proposed by the school boards was resolved that the New York State School Boards Association actively support legislation which would require the design and validation of an APR process that truly informs instruction and thereby promotes student learning. There was another resolution suggesting a no confidence vote in the APPR process, which resulted in an amendment being proposed that said, resolved that the New York State School Boards Association expressed a no confidence in the current New York State APR system, that it actively support legislation which would require the design and validation of APR process that truly informs instruction and thereby promotes student learning. With the word no confidence, that did not garner a whole lot of support on the floor from the other school boards, which prompted some of the people from our district to say in the meeting that, you know, we need to have something that's got a little more bite to it. So we've come back with our kind of, with the legislation committee getting together on a proposal 10, which says resolve, and this would be what we are going to try once again to influence to be, resolve that the New York State School Boards Association shall advocate for a new educator evaluation system that more accurately measures teacher contributions to student achievement and thereby promotes student learning. It shall do this by working with the Board of Regents, Department of Education, and state legislators to modify laws so as to de-emphasize the over-reliance and weighting of standardized test scores and focus more on teacher quality and professional learning. There's a whole thing in the resolution, but as Seth said, it's a lot of the stuff we said before, and it's there for you to read, and it's in our testing proposal from a year ago. But we felt this had a little bit more bite to it, and it was
ask for a little more bite?
where do you want to see it?
Well,
and how?
Just again, you know, advocate for a new educator evaluation system that more accurately measures. I mean, does that imply that it's even remotely accurately measuring now? Again, I'd like to see some language in there that says.
Omit the word more.
I'd like to see some language in there that basically says, and I know you don't. The people at the meeting didn't like the phrase no confidence, but, you know, I'd like to get the message across that we don't like the way things are being done now at all. It's not that we want to see it enhanced. It's not that we want to see it changed a little bit. You know, we don't like it. Period. Fix it. So that's just, you know, I'd like to see, the language in there that says, you know, the way that we're doing things today is not working.
But if you take out more, and you just say
that
a system that accurately measures.
Can I just measures? Because this doesn't.
I think you want accurately, though, because I think that's important for us.
Broken.
Right.
You know, even even if we said something else, shall advocate for a new educator evaluation system to replace the current flawed system, broken system, whatever you want to call it, that more accurately. I just want to get the point across that, you know, like the folks in Newark Valley were trying to do, say, we don't like the current system we have in place.
Do you like the word overhaul again?
I don't know. Overhaul. Let's figure out the evaluation system.
Valid.
That creates.
What did you say again?
Well, if we, okay, valid. That might, so if we added language in there that said, shall advocate for a new educator evaluation system, comma,
that creates.
To replace the current invalid system, comma. Okay, no comment.
I know you want to make a strong statement, but right. I think it was pretty clear when we sat there that there are certain words that other districts simply are not going to support from a governance point of view. And I understand I'm sensitive to that. System. And that's the reality of what you have to deal with is we can be as strong as we want and just have an amendment that doesn't get passed and doesn't get anywhere. Or we can try to get something that we think has a chance to garner the support of multiple districts with the fact that it's got to be something that allows you to govern still. And when you use a term like no confidence and you're the governing body, it's very hard for a governing body to enforce rules based on something that you've publicly declared and voted on you have no confidence in.
How about
and that's
just
the catch-22.
Using the word create, because by saying create, it really means that you haven't had anything in the past. A system that an evaluation system that
for the creation creates of
and creates a system, we can check out the other system, that accurately measures teachers' contributions. You want to say that you want to start from the beginning, so you're going to create a new system.
Advocate for the creation of a new evaluation system
right.
that accurately
that
measures
says,
teacher
yes.
contributions.
And that really says it's the other one you have is no good.
Not the one that exists.
And it's not as harsh. We've got to win votes over. That's what we're trying to do, is to get people to flip and come to our side. We're not fixing the broken system. We want them to start all over again by creating a new one.
So shall advocate for the creation
right.
of a new educator system? What?
I said, no, I don't. I mean, I'm for including some language. I think you got to sell it. And I don't know if it sells.
That's
right.
what I'm saying. You.
I don't know.
We may fervently believe it.
The original idea of the creation of a new educator evaluation system to replace the current flawed system,
so
I think that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, if we could.
That's fine.
Yeah.
God bless you.
So you said
that's, yes.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. Yes.
To replace the current flawed system.
Flawed is a word that I think everyone can agree on.
Flawed.
Could you just read it over so we know what we're
yeah.
voting on?
Resolve that NISBA shall advocate for the creation of a new educator evaluation system to replace the current flawed system that
okay.
more accurately measures teacher contributions.
Okay.
Instead of more, that will accurately?
That will accurately.
That will accurately.
Measure.
Yeah.
Instead of measures, right? It's
right.
will
Make
accurately
it singular.
Measure. And thereby promote student learning. There'll be no S's, correct?
Yes.
I'm looking at my grammar police here. When I'm leading the talk on grammar, you know something's wrong. Okay.
All right.
So we're good with that?
We're good
you
with
strengthened
that.
Strengthened it?
Support as amended.
Yes.
Only support.
Yeah.
Right. Now, now's the question. If we get no amendments, we're
no.
saying no to the.
Otherwise opposed.
Because it's simply not strong enough.
Right.
Okay. 11, permit Board of Education and voters to establish voting wards. This was one that actually had a lot of discussion at that meeting, and it was interestingly so, because I guess there's some upstate districts that feel the need for this to get around what they feel are special interest happening in their districts, where, you know, when you really think about it for us, it actually probably would create those very things that other districts
That's
upstate
right.
are trying to avoid. So from a local point of view, we thought that would be, you know, a horrible decision to do these wards. So we opposed it. Seth?
I mean, I know it's our meeting that we're having in public, but for those that are here, the The next issue is creating election wards. Essentially what that would mean is that you would elect someone that represents Pasadena, a different person that represents Stratford, a different person that represents Old Bath, a different person that represents Parkway.
Right.
Maybe someone that, you know, it's Matlin versus POB Middle School. And essentially what you would be doing is creating more contentious elections that gets personal. You are advocating for one group over another. You're not working and focusing on everybody. I actually think it's – I mean, the idea behind it is to address like a wedge issue or a single issue where there's a block vote for whether it be for a religious, sports, or academic reason. You know, the way to mitigate it probably is to do some kind of hybrid approach. It's not being proposed. I'm not suggesting it. But, for our district, I think it would – I mean, having, you know, pitting – school areas against other school areas within a district
is
an awful thing.
And which eventually leads to gerrymandering.
So, and eventually leads to gerrymandering.
Right. So we opposed it.
Are we all good still opposing that? Yes. Great. Yes. Next one was New York State subsidized veterans property tax exemption. That one was kind of easy. It was basically saying rather than rejigger money that we're getting and just move it from one pocket to the other, let's actually have the state give us money to give back to the veterans. We were all approval. I think everyone felt that one was a good one. Next one was state intervention in schools deemed to be financially mismanaged.
We opposed
this,
that one
was opposed as basically that it went against local control. Opposed raising charter school cap. That was probably
supported.
The most unanimous vote that there was there.
Yeah, there were no notes.
Require charter schools to enroll, retain ELL on special needs students at comparable rates.
That was unanimous also.
Yes. Expand access to ABIP and other enrichment programs through online delivery. And that was pretty strongly supported for those districts who needed that to be able to bring those programs to them. So we supported that as well. We still do?
Yeah, because
opposed, expose expansion mayoral control beyond New York City. We all supported that. 18th, funding to expand career and technical educational programs. We all supported that, I believe, correct? Incorporate pre-kindergarten into operational school aid formulas.
We oppose
that. The rationale behind opposing it was basically the feeling that all it was going to do is take the pot of money and spread it around differently. It wasn't actually going to create any new funds. So we didn't like that that's how that one was phrased. That's where that came from on the meeting, because the next one you'll see says aid pre-kindergarten transportation to the same extent as K-12. That one was supported. And many of the main reasons that was supported was it was felt that right now we were told that the transportation aid formula does not include any pre-kindergarten kids on your buses. So we just felt if it's the formula, it's the formula. So we supported that one. Okay, 21 was require NISBA to dissolve the Student Achievement Institute. The next one were proposed resolutions that were not recommended for adoption by
NISBA. Is there anyone that anybody wants NISBA to support maybe instead of going through them all?
Yeah.
Wait, what are we up to?
21 through 30.
They were all opposed.
Right. However, it should be noted that 25 we tried to roll back into what became our anti-testing proposal.
Right.
And on 27... We opposed 27, but we felt we had a better way to do 27 that we felt had a chance at being garnered by other people. Jody, you want to read what we came up with for proposal 27?
Yes. It was strong.
Well, first, let me say that the way that this proposal was initially sent in, it was very vague. It basically just said we support a parent's right to refuse their child from testing. I felt that the language needed to be much stronger and to ensure that we were advocating for schools being prohibited from punishing anybody, the district itself, the teachers, the students, the parents. Nobody should suffer any negative consequence because parents choose to opt their children out of testing. So,
Which is their right,
yes. So resolve that the New York State School Boards Association supports legislation that recognizes a parent or guardian's right on behalf of his or her child to take or to refuse to take state tests in ELA and math in grades 3-8, including standalone field tests, and prohibits any type of punishment or negative consequence against the students, parent or guardian, teachers, administrators, or school districts for such refusals.
And we were hoping that that would have a chance, and that by looking at it, the negative penalties as opposed to a blanket push by the school boards for the opt-out, that we could actually get something that supports where school districts need to be. So are we still, we're still good with that one? That's one Lauren's going to fight for the science.
Yes.
Yep.
But only as a measure.
Correct. Cool.
So 21 and 22, I know we're not considered. 23, we as a board supported. I just want to confirm. I know NISBA did not. I just want to make sure we were still supportive.
On 23, and I know I wasn't there, and you guys discussed it, I actually oppose it. 23 is that the NISBA's employee compensation be considered public information. NISBA's a private organization. We could choose to be part of it, or we could choose not to be part of it. So they're not subject to FOIL. And I get the idea of transparency. To me, I think this is a complete and utter waste of time at the convention to have a discussion about them disclosing it. If there's an issue about the money, we have elected area directors and officials that look at it. They have access to the books. If they think somebody is not getting paid appropriately, either underpaid or overpaid, they believe something's wrong with the books, it's their obligations. We elect them. Just like we get elected as trustees, they get elected as trustees in the organization. But it's a private organization. And quite frankly, if they're doing their job and they're getting results, it doesn't make a difference to me as long as it's done the right way and approved by the people that have to do it. So to me, the disclosure, the quote-unquote transparency that comes along with it, I mean, it's a private organization. We don't have to be part of it. So to force them to disclose it, to me, I'm not quite sure really accomplishes anything. I mean, the cost for us to be a member is, I don't even think, $2,000. And so it's not, you know, it's not like there's an allegation that something fishy is going on. And I don't really get the idea behind this. To me, I think it's just, I look at it as a complete waste of time. Obviously, the six of you feel otherwise, so I'm interested to hear why.
This is not new. This has been ongoing for 30 years, where people have been wanting to know what are the salaries of people.
Did you say we support?
Yes. And the question is that we pay dues with taxpayers' money to an organization. When they raise the dues or they say something, we just would like to know where's the money going. And that we never looked at it as a private organization. We look at it as an organization that we belong to, again, using taxpayers' money. And if anybody were to say, what is the salary of so-and-so? I don't know. What's the salary of so-and-so? I don't know. It's not that you're going to publish it and put it on the front page of the New York Times. What you're really saying is this is information we should have, especially when they increase dues. That's how, you know, I felt.
I mean, there's a lot of private organizations that we put our money towards. Does that mean that every organization and vendor that we associate with has to publish all the employees that we use, all the employees that they use to support us? We have architects. We have other vendors that we use. Are we
but
saying
this is
explicit?
Different? They're representing us. They go and they lobby for us. They make statements for us. They go to conventions. They do all this other stuff. And they, I believe, have an obligation as a group that uses our school district's money to know where it is. And I don't look at our architects, and I don't look at that. That's truly corporate. This is an organization that is the Nassau Suffolk School Board's organization. They represent us.
Okay. Could agree, disagree. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Therefore, I oppose.
No, we support.
Yeah, but
right.
Go
okay,
backwards.
I'm really confused. What did we just say we're doing?
Okay.
Yes, we got it. We support it because it's negative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Number
23.
Who supports it? Raise your hand. Seth won me over. We still have enough. We support it. Correct.
Okay. So then I still have more questions. Hang on. 24.
I'm not good with this microphone. All right. So 24, also NISBA opposed, and our board supported. I want to confirm.
Which
make,
is
make
public
names
donors.
Of all donors and amounts of donations. Seth?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with opposing this also, again, for the same reason. If people want to donate money, that's great. They don't really have control over the, you know, the positions that NISBA takes. That's what we're talking about today, to take a position at a meeting of a delegate body. So the direction of NISBA and the positions that they take are going to be dictated by our delegates and that vote, not by someone that gives the money. The positions of NISBA are not going to be impacted by that. We get to make that as part of our elected officials within NISBA will help do that. So we get to vote in doing that. So to me,
kind of like our elected officials in the legislature do that.
Well, that's where we're going to get to report cards in a little bit, I think.
I think
that's right, and you have every right to vote them out of the office.
Right. I think one of the issues that was somebody raised was the name Bill Gates.
Yes.
And turned around and said, you know, if Bill Gates is giving tremendous amounts of money, mm-hmm. what is the ulterior motive for it? You know, how is it working? Because people know where he's coming from with charter schools and a lot of other mm-hmm. stuff he's doing. And I think that was a concern. And that if you list it, is it going to change anything? Absolutely not. But it would be interesting to see.
What happens if there's an anonymous donation? The greatest kind of charity that people give are those that give anonymously. What happens if I wanted to give $1 billion to NISBA, but I didn't want my name to be – are you saying that you can't accept $1 billion from NISBA to advocate on behalf of public education because I don't want my name being given? I'm just saying people are giving for a good reason.
Right, right.
Yeah. People are giving for a good reason, and they're not dictating how NISBA takes its position.
For that, you just became my best friend.
I'm just saying, people are giving for a good reason, and they're not making the decision of what NISBA's position are. We are, which is why we're having a very lengthy discussion tonight.
Very lengthy. Very lengthy.
I just, you know, we're in an age where, you know, education policy seems to be for sale. I think for the sake of transparency, you know, the school board should show, the State Board Association should show who they're getting their money from. Because, yes, their positions are voted on by us, but how strongly they advocate for some things over others, you know, do I think it's going to be influenced? But again, given the current culture where you've got very wealthy people buying education policy, I think for the sake of transparency, they should have to say where their donations are coming from.
I understand.
I like her point, too.
Okay. We'll have to take a vote on this one.
Okay, so we're voting. This is number
24.
Make public names of all donors and amounts of donations. All those who support making the public names of all donors and amounts of donations. The guy's good. What can I tell you? All those opposed. But I agree with all the sentiments you made, Jody. I just think he laid out an argument that supersedes it. I know we all.
Yeah,
it's a guy.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's a guy thing.
Do you
want to
also
there.
Talk about the one with the report card? Where was that one?
Oh.
Can we talk about 25 and 26?
I guess yes. We're talking about everything. Yeah.
Now I know I'm in the minority here, but if our amendments to Proposal 2 and Proposal 10 are voted down, I am perfectly comfortable saying that we have no confidence in the existing testing and APPR system. I know that the rest of the board doesn't agree with me, but you know, I would prefer to see the amendments to Proposal 2 and Proposal 10, but if those are shot down, I'd like us to consider, you know.
So you're saying if 2 and 10 get voted for with the language that we agreed we oppose.
Yes.
The given language.
Yes.
You would then propose in that case we're for 25 and 26.
Yes.
So it's a conditional. Yes.
It's a conditional, yes, because I think what Newark Valley was trying to accomplish in 25 and 26 is accomplished in our amendments to 2 and 10.
It is.
But if they fail
and they're going to stick with the weak language, I would like to see, again, that very strong, you know, yeah.
Okay, just because I have to be the devil's advocate on most issues, and that is, what's the resolution doing then, other than simply saying, we don't like it? That's it?
That's it.
We don't like it.
No confidence resolution. No,
we don't want to. We want to end it. We don't want to replace it. We don't want to come up with a new testing system. We don't want to come up with a new evaluation system. We don't like it. Get rid of it. That's it. That's what the position of NISBA should take. Just get rid of it. No tests. No evaluations. Nothing.
That's not what the resolution says.
The resolution
says. Let's read 25.
That as of October 2015, NISBA and its member boards expressed no confidence in the New York State testing system. I'm not saying I disagree with you.
But if you combine that with the old proposal 2, which has that very soft, hey, let's try something new, combined,
it's a strong statement because you're not, you know, proposal two, either it's going to stay the way it is or it's going to get amended the way we want. And that's the one that says we need to make changes to the testing and then number 10 to the APPR system. They're just very weak in their language.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, they are. They're weak in their language, which is why we don't like those earlier ones.
Right.
Right. There's nothing to it. There's no substance. That's
I also think, but as weak as that is, I think this is equally as weak because it just says we don't like it. So two weak things equal a strong one? I mean, I don't know.
No,
I mean,
which is why, to our credit, we did work hard to come up with something we thought was good.
If the weak one is going to pass, is the weak one at least strengthened a little bit by the no confidence?
Maybe.
Yeah,
it could.
Maybe.
I mean, it's not costing anything.
If the weak ones pass... You're saying we support this only if the weak ones pass.
Correct. As they were originally stated.
I'm okay with that. But if they don't pass, then this doesn't pass either. Then we don't support this either.
Right.
If our amendments are not accepted, and the soft ones
don't pass,
nothing happens.
Then I'm not comfortable just saying no confidence. It's got to be all or nothing.
It's got to be back to the drawing board.
Right. That's all I'm saying. So I'm okay with saying if the weak ones pass, then we can have these other weak ones pass too.
And this is the circular dilemma that I had, you know, that I said even out loud at that.
So then we take – then everything fails and we take no position about anything.
That's basically what you said.
Right. It's a standing position of we go back to drawing board next year.
If two – what we're saying is – right. If two doesn't pass based on enough people opposing it for the reason that we say you should oppose it, but our amendment doesn't pass either. And then you're left with no position there. And what Seth's saying in that case, do you want the only position from NISBA to be no confidence?
I'm okay with that.
I'm not. But I am okay with if two passes as being weak, then having no confidence because the two with weak has no teeth of anything in it. And this was the whole dilemma with this whole thing that I couldn't get my arms around.
Right.
I brought up. And still don't have a good, obviously.
I mean, that was the frustration of this whole
dinner
conversation.
At least if the two weak ones pass, we're on the same page that the two other no-confidence votes should pass, too. So at least there's direction for Lauren. Yeah. Otherwise, let's let Lauren decide, and we'll blame her no matter what happens.
Run and get us all.
Okay.
And now, we did 27.
Yep. Oh, 29 was that.
Yeah,
29.
One. 29 was about basically trying to give it back to the elected officials to have a report card based on support for public education. We actually, even the people who opposed it, liked it. However, in reality, one of the best things I heard was someone said, okay, so who's going to do the report cards? Who's actually going to be responsible for this? Who's going to cover the cost? And how are we going to make sure that the report cards become? And, well, school board said they wouldn't do it, and BOCES said they wouldn't do it. In the meeting.
I understand. I mean, but if you look at the rationale and the idea, again, the idea is that NISBA shall give yearly report card grades to elected officials, rating them in their support for public education. So here's where you make change, right? If you're ranting and raving and writing letters and showing up and doing rallies doesn't have an impact, you hit them in a bunch of different places. One is in their pockets, so it's fundraising, right?
Right.
Which we obviously can't spend money in fundraising. We can advocate through NISBA. Obviously, that's the thing. But the other thing is by either running somebody against them in a primary, making them expend their funds to fight to keep there, or publicly say, hey, all you teachers, educators out there, don't vote for this person, they're bad, and all you parents and guardians of students who are going through, they're bad, and the way you do that is by issue report cards, right? Just like our kids get report cards. And so here they're suggesting a method of doing it is to have each area director appoint an ad hoc committee to assess their local people. To me, this makes sense. This is one way that we could do it. I think it's a good solution. In my profession, the county bar associations have a judicial candidate screening committee that assess whether they believe it's, you know, a candidate for for a judge position is qualified or unqualified, and there's different levels. And so I don't see why we couldn't use NISBA.
They didn't want to do it.
Well, I'm saying it's a position. We're not telling them how to do it. We're saying this is a position.
Right. We're saying we want to – now, maybe it doesn't happen in the next 2 months, 6 months, whatever it is, but this is the direction that we want to go to assess and make public statements that these people
– sort of like the NRA, where they have a list and they give you a
That's
grade.
Right.
So now we're saying –
I mean, but the one thing I have to say, you know, NISBA is opposed to this because allegedly – allegedly because of its political nature – that NISBA is a nonpartisan membership organization, does not engage in electoral politics, except that that's exactly what they do, is to lobby and engage in politics. It's just on those matters that we, you know, how they define it, right? So,
did we support this, Lauren? Do we still support? Do we still
support
this?
I thought you said it was opposed. That's why I was.
No, we support.
Oh, well, then
we're still going to support.
I'm sorry to waste.
That's okay. It was three minutes
of everyone's time.
I must tell you,
it was
a very interesting dialogue because it got very heated. Yeah.
That was a recounted one, too, a couple
yes.
of times. It was very...
And you know what? I wasn't trusting that lady in the back counting those.
No,
counting.
You...
I kept trying to look
a single vote.
My own count.
And then invite state, federal candidates to the annual convention. A lot of people felt that would just overrun the convention.
And that really...
Into a total
yeah, that was going to become a political platform as opposed to an educational platform.
Right.
So on that one, we opposed it.
We opposed.
Okay, so... Lauren,
I have six other proposals I'd like.
Gary, what's
yes.
important is that once we just clean up the wording of our new resolutions and stuff, we send this to every single school district. That's when we receive it in the mail.
I actually got a little guide from the folks at NISBA on what the steps are to do.
Right.
So I'll send that over to Gene, and we'll come up with a plan on how we'll get the word out.
Because how we're going to get the support. Is with a cover letter to it also so
right.
that we can be in touch with the people and you sort of start to get your tally of where it's going.
Yep. Okay. I promised I'd be jumping a little out of order at times, and I'm going to. Joe Horowitz is here. He's the head of the audit committee.
Hello.
Chair of the audit committee. And he missed Mary Ann's presentation tonight, but he saw it last week, and he's going to give some feedback and comments based on her presentation.
Yes. So, first of all, I'd like to say that I've been on this audit committee for a couple of years, and I really enjoy working for the school district. Mary Ann has been with the school district for longer than I've been on the audit committee, but she's done a fantastic job. I'm very comfortable with the work that she does. Between myself and Barbie, who can't be here tonight, we have about 20 years of audit experience between the two of us, financial, IT, everything. I've done government auditing as well. Very comfortable with the work she's done and very happy with the results that she gives us. So I know that she gave us the results of our, it's the state controller one we're talking about, right, Gary? Now, from experience, I've worked with the state controller in the past, working for government. They are the types that they can't go without a finding. But if you look in the report, if you look embedded in the report, they even specifically state there is no criteria for a reserve funding. So I don't know what their tone was on this audit report, but they gave all these recommendations. It was a kind of a negative tone to the report. However, we did have the discussion on the report. The district is in a very good financial position. I think it's very good that we have these reserves. There are a lot of districts out there now that do not have this type of reserves in case there are emergencies. There are things that are just out of our control, as we've discussed, medical funding, retirements, any other emergency that might come up. It's a good thing that we have these reserves. So regardless of what the state controller says, and I'd like to thank Richard for his great responses back to the state controller, along with the team, Jen as well. I think it was very tactful that we'd look into it. We did have those discussions. We're going to see how we can use some of the reserve funding for anything that we might need to have done throughout the district. But I do caution not to get overly aggressive with spending these reserves, because we do not want to catch ourselves in any kind of shortfall.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All the time you put
you
in for the committee.
Done.
It's much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Thank you. I now resume our schedule on our reports and discussions, bond update. Speaking of
needing to have, why it's important to have a strong financial statement for a AAA bond rating, which will result in the cost of the bond saving us thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And we've already refinanced older debt based on the AAA bond rating, which got us, saved us over $1 million cumulative over the life of those bonds. So here is the bond update.
Okay, well, our projector heats up again. I'm actually going to skip to, before you can even see it, one of the last slides in the presentation. In November, we've invited BBS, or district architects, to do the presentation because there's some pieces of tonight's presentation that I think are more well spoken to by our architects concerning the approval process up in Albany for projects. And the extended length of time that not only Plainview Old Bethpage, but all school districts are experiencing with getting projects approved up in Albany. And they will be able to answer some specifics about different types of projects and where we are in the timeline. So that'll be November. In December, we'll be bringing in school construction consultants. They are our construction managers. They have somebody on site here every day. Even now, as really we're just on punch list from the summer work, because they're also instrumental in putting together bid packages in the phasing in of the work we're going to do during this school year and into next summer. So that will be our December presentation. And really at that point in time, we'll be ready to talk about how we're going to go forward with the window projects that we're actually going to do during the school year. So now that we have a picture, I'll move forward. One thing we didn't see in the last presentation were the finished Matlin tennis courts, which I know everybody has seen already, but we didn't have this in the last presentation. The community utilization of these courts, the high school courts, and the POB middle school track is really unbelievable. And, of course, our student athletes are enjoying them as well. A timeline of where we're going through September 2016. In January of 2016 through October, we'll be working through our complete replacement of school interior doors and hardware replacements. To refresh your memory what we're doing, in some doors we don't have glass partitions. We can't cut into them because as soon as we penetrate those doors, the doors lose their fire ratings. In some places, the doors do not have adequate fire ratings, and in some places, they quite honestly have just aged out. In addition, the door hardware will give us ADA accessibility and also will be able to be locked from the interior, which is an important safety measure. A couple of months back, the board adopted a standardization of door hardware so we can actually start purchasing the hardware and have it standardized throughout the district, and we're working with vendors now. We believe we know that. What we have, we're going to specify. We have one final meeting on that this week. Starting in February, we're expecting to start our window replacements, mostly at Parkway, Pasadena, and Jamaica. Our construction managers have been in the district working with us for the past 2 weeks, coming out with a project timeline for those. That's going to be important for our bid document that we're expecting to put out towards the end of this month, because the pricing is going to be based on a particular vendor's ability to meet that timeline and that phasing that we put in. POB Middle School is a much more complicated job because it's two stories. And there we are, when we're talking window walls, we're really talking two-story window walls. And that's a much longer job. We expect to start POB Middle School at this point probably towards the end of May, and we'll be looking at one-story sites that students are not necessarily entering, so our kitchen facilities, the back of custodial areas, perhaps some one-story areas. We're still phasing that out. And, of course, Jamaica Avenue is included in that project as well, and we're working on phasing that. That will take most of the 2016 year, with a lot of that work being dedicated to summer work in POB Middle School. June through September 2016, there's some what we call phase one projects that we didn't get to this summer. One was Stratford Road floors, which we didn't do simply because Stratford was used for many purposes. Our staff from other buildings was based out of Stratford. We had camp running out of Stratford. So now we can move those programs out of Stratford and do a lot of work in Stratford next summer. Parkway roofing wasn't done this past summer simply because the parkway roof was still under warranty. So we didn't want to put a new roof on while there was still useful life in the old roof. And the old Bethpage crawl space needed, and we're still in the analysis and design phase of the old Bethpage crawl space. There is a lot of piping, valve work in there that we need to work on. And with all the work that we did in Old Beth this past summer, we really just couldn't do it all. And also, that's not the type of work we would do while students are in the building. Things that are in the design phase: ADA accessibility upgrades at all schools. BBS will be able to speak to those next month. Auditoriums are in their final stages of design phase. We had meetings last week with architects, construction managers, and also our staff about the finishing touches, what we would considering the finishing touches on those, which are just refining the lighting and sound systems and starting to put those bid packages together. Security upgrades, I think we started this meeting with something that was very important and about the importance of planning for and looking, being forward-thinking in school security. We started having meetings on security upgrades last week. They kind of go hand-in-hand with technology upgrades. Specifically, in the past week, we started talking about our camera and motion sensor locations. We're going to be visiting all schools with a proposed map and reviewing those maps with the principals over the next couple of weeks. As I said earlier, November, BBS will be here to talk about project timelines and be able to really talk in detail and talk about some of the things we're experiencing with project approvals up in SED, especially with our more complex projects that might involve multiple trades, including electricians. And then December, school construction consultants will be here for a presentation, talk about what they've been doing in the district, and also talk about the coordination of approved projects moving forward. And with that, I'm wondering if you have any questions.
Yeah, when we were talking about the placement of cameras, mm-hmm. are we going to use our connection with Homeland Security, especially in lieu of what's really going on, to strategically place cameras so that the people on the inside would have enough warning also if something is going down?
Well, Homeland Security gave us recommendations.
Okay.
And we also had another report done by an independent vendor. BBS has taken that information and incorporated that into their suggestions of camera placement. Homeland Security has kind of gotten out of their involvement with schools and local governments, and that really happened with sequestration. That portion of the budget was chopped, and they really never got back to it. All they were able to do is, if you remember that period of time, your report got delivered very late. When sequestration started, they stopped that process, and then when money started flowing back in, they simply had enough money to finish those reports and deliver them. So they do give out advice to more local boards. And one of the things that Nassau-BOCES does is they work with Nassau County Police Department and representatives of Homeland Security, and then they in turn bring that information to school districts. So we've been involved with that conversation. Homeland Security won't come back in at this time
That's
to evaluate
unfortunate.
That.
It really is. The other thing is when we do put in security cameras, that is not – we are not going public with where we're putting the cameras, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
No, you
won't see that in a map in a presentation.
Okay.
If that's the question.
Yeah. Just want to make sure. Thank you.
One special note: there will be some cameras where we want people to
right.
know where they are, such as looking at our tennis courts, which are kind of preservation
so,
of property thing. But for the most part, we prefer to keep those locations as quiet as possible.
Okay. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm down to 8% of my battery.
Any more questions about that? Okay, so that's going to bring us to our next report, which is board goals. We've narrowed them down, had some discussions on them, and right now we have a draft. That does anyone have any further comments on them?
Well, Dr. Lewis isn't here, then I can start cutting them a little bit. Notice I didn't say that into the microphone.
I guess we'll do what we've done each time. We'll take them as sections, so we'll start with one student performance.
Well, I have two questions for my first question is, have we gotten any input from any groups? Stakeholder groups. We asked?
No response.
Okay.
It actually was recently sent out to the PTA, the PCT, and ASTA this past, last week.
Okay.
Again, just as a reminder.
Okay. Then my only comment under our first goal, student performance, is in A, we say exploration of the AP Capstone project. Didn't we get an email today that it was accepted? So should it be implementation or to pursue it or some such thing?
No. So at this point in time, we applied for participation in the project, and the next steps would be to sign an agreement and then create a plan based on the information that they provide back to us.
So would exploration still be appropriate?
Right now, because we haven't signed the agreement, yes. Okay. We have a month to sign the agreement.
Any other, you can give your comments if you have any specific ones still. Okay. Section two, do we have any changes to school climate and safety? Fiscal planning, communication advocacy. So later in the meeting when we get to it, we will vote on it. D, work with NISBET to review D. Investigate ways to expand source of revenue. No, 2D. Follow up with Homeland Security and ensure that all safety procedures follow appropriate crisis responses and all staff crisis management training to respond to emergencies.
Well, I would like to leave the second part at least, all staff receive crisis management training to respond to emergencies. So maybe we
Homeland Security. 2D, whether we should still say Homeland Security.
Yeah, start with
Right. Rich, your thoughts?
I've looked at that since I first saw it. Homeland Security is saying they won't come back in, but with recent events, will they get back into the consulting business? They might. If it's not Homeland Security, the thought I have is then who do we specify? Homeland Security can say no, and they can refer us to somebody else. So I wasn't too hung up on the Homeland Security part. Because in the end, we're going to be looking for counsel from experts regarding our security.
Can we say law enforcement organizations?
Sure.
That's not specific to Homeland Security. You know any of those? Thank God. All right. So we're okay with just saying law enforcement agencies. Okay. So with that change made, are we going to be – well, we'll vote on it later. Can't predict what's going to happen later. I understand. It's got to play out.
All right, so now we go to public participation. Oh, we have a missing board announcement that Seth would like to add, so we're going to double back.
Not really.
But this is not a board goal. It's an announcement.
This is an announcement. So in Sunday's Newsday, there was a top story, Fighting a Lousy Enemy, two-page big spread on everybody's favorite own lice and how some lice are resistant to treatment. And I know that where our nurses are relooking and revisiting our policy associated with it, again, I get that it's not a hazard, it's not a safety hazard, but it is a nuisance, a costly one at that for many parents, and I don't think it's too much to ask that as the nurses, and I'm sure we'll get some feedback soon, but as nurses revisit it, perhaps there could be an email that gets sent out or a building or a district-wide policy that could be consistently followed with regard to notice whenever there is a reported incident of lice, because we know a procedure. So
as a follow-up to the board's request, the nurses have met regarding lice procedures to follow consistently throughout the district. Ms. Becker supervises the nurses. She and I have some follow-up questions based on their proposals, and we need to meet and get back to them based on our own recommendations. And then once that's finalized, we can bring that to the public. And then, again, the agreement was that those procedures would be publicly noted on each of the school's website.
Which brings us to public participation. District Policy 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others may in some way be violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. We ask that you please be courteous and listen to give people a chance to speak. Floor is open. Oh, we got one. We got one or two. Here we go. Come on down.
Is it on? Thank you. Now that I'm scratching my head, thank you, Seth, for talking about lice. Good evening. My name is Beth Nispel. I reside at 27 Phipps Lane in Plainview. I wanted to speak to the board tonight to communicate my feelings about some of the things going on in elementary school, specifically third grade and the math curriculum. My daughter, who has always been a happy, excited student, is in tears every night as we sit down to do the math homework together. Talking to friends in all four of the elementary schools, this seems to be something that many people are facing, pretty consistent. We're facing complete meltdowns with the kids. Some kids have been told by the teachers it's only going to get harder. I'm also a third grade teacher in a neighboring district. I'm concerned that the very first math test given in third grade was given 9 days after the start of school. It started with rounding and estimating after skipping a unit on place value. As an educator and as a mom, I question why place value wasn't taught, because how could 7 and 8 year old children estimate and round when they don't understand place value? That just doesn't make sense to me. I think the single most successful thing for students in learning is to have time to practice. And in 9 days' time, with every single day a new concept being taught, I just don't see that practice happening. I was excited to learn that in the middle school, you are adopting a program that I'm using, which is the Jen Saravella IRA. If you look at the philosophy of the book, it follows Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers, talking about 10,000 hours of practice, where he clearly has researched and looked to professionals in various professions and said that in order for somebody to be truly successful at something and to master it, they need to have at least 10,000 hours of success. In 9 days of instructional time with, I'm sure, assemblies and all kinds of stuff and all the subject areas, I question the pace of the curriculum, the time the kids are given to practice, the feedback that they're getting. When we received the first test back, there was a letter attached. We're at Stratford Road. There was a letter attached to the test stating that the kids did not master most of the things on the test. And immediately, the class moved on to the next topic, which was place value. When I spoke to the teacher, I was told that in 2 weeks we would be having the next exam. And I said, well, what about the fact that the kids are clearly struggling? They're struggling to the point that it warranted a grade level letter being sent home. Okay. So it warranted this letter being sent home, and sorry, that lost my train of thought with that. So how are we dealing with this from an instructional point of view? The kids have not mastered it. They're not proficient at it. Why are we continuing to move forward at such a rapid pace? It's my understanding that the curricular calendar is set by the district, and I think it's time that we look at this to see what's reasonable, what's not. Why are we jumping to a topic that shouldn't be covered until the kids have the basic knowledge and understanding of one skill before they can developmentally reach the next one? I also question why it seems, from what I have seen, that the only tool that's being used in the district is Envisions. I think that we should not be using any one program. I know in my district, every elementary building has a math coach. Every elementary building has a reading coach. And what those people do is they coach the teachers, they go through the state standards, they go through lots of resources that are out there, including the modules, including Go Math, and including things that they develop that are more developmentally appropriate. And we're just using, in plain view, one resource. I question how the teachers are getting support as the curriculum is constantly changing, how, if they're telling us that the kids aren't mastering it, who's supporting them to now help the kids? Are small groups being pulled? Have we looked at a CPA approach in math, which has proven to be successful? If anybody's not sure what that is, you start with the concrete, you move to the pictorial, and then ultimately you move to the abstract. We seem to be moving to the abstract without giving our students a chance to start at a concrete level and breezing over that pictorial level. And developmentally, I think that's doing a huge disservice to our children. So I guess to sum up my feeling, my opinion of what's happening in the district, is you have kids who love school who are all of a sudden faced with this huge jump in the expectations from second grade to third grade, who are falling apart, who are having meltdowns, who unfortunately for their teachers are being asked to move at such a rapid pace that it's just not possible for them to truly learn it and master it and to practice and to practice and to practice, which anything we do in life, in order to be really good, we need time, we need opportunity to practice, we need guidance, we need coaching, we need feedback, we need reflection. Are we helping our students to learn? Are we helping them to understand and grasp the concepts of mathematics? Or are we just trying to prepare them for a test that we know from an educational standpoint is completely inappropriate for their level? I've been teaching upper elementary for many, many years. The reading and the math, we know, anybody who has actually seen the test, it's grade levels above where they are. So as a district, I'm asking you to please consider that I want my child to come to school. I want her to learn and build a solid foundation in mathematics and in all the subjects. I want her to be given a chance to succeed. I don't understand why in September my 8-year-old daughter is hysterical crying and why she has decided that she's a terrible math student in September of her third grade year. It's been a devastating experience for myself and for many others. If any of you are following on social media, this is across the district. And I do think that our sole reliance on Envisions is a big cause of the problem, and our lack of support for our teachers and our lack of really looking at a realistic curricular calendar is something that needs to be looked at. Thank you for your time.
So I just want to, I want to comment on a couple pieces of information. The district does put together a pacing guide, which has input from our staff, so it's not just one person making that decision. Our teachers are involved in the revision of that pacing guide every summer, and there is flexibility within that guide, obviously, for specific teachers to make adjustments as needed based on the population in the class and how they're performing. With regard to your specific concerns about your child, I'm going to ask that the building principal follow up with you to go over that with you and actually spend a little time to go over the third grade math curriculum with you. With regard to the instructional materials that we use, Envisions is not the sole program for the district, for the elementary curriculum. It is the framework that we use, but we do use components of the modules. Believe it or not, we still use pieces of investigations, although that was a hot topic. I know, Gary, cover your ears. But the teachers use investigations as well as their own teacher-created materials. With regard to the staff development for the teachers, we actually have spent quite a bit of district resources to support teachers with regard to the new Common Core math standards. We have had Larry Farrell, who is considered an expert in the field, provide over 36 instructional days for teachers K through middle school. I think we had K through six. Work with Larry Farrell over the past couple of years. He is actually slated to continue that work with teachers this year on an as-needs basis, and some of the schools have already made that schedule available. On top of that, we actually have our own in-district staff development plan that supports teachers in mathematics. But I will make sure that the principal does follow up with you to go over your specific concerns.
Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. Surprise, not about math at this point. I left the high school after a volleyball game tonight at 7:15, and I had parked kind of in, you know, that little circle area, like, you know, right in front, and it was pretty much pitch black. It was very hard to see. You had could not see where I was walking. I've talked about this before. I've brought up, can there be temporary lighting? I'm pretty sure here, you know, that during Sing it was particularly bad, and God forbid if it's raining, there's no visibility. When you have like tons of cars and they're like, you know, pick up at the airport, you know, triple parked and kids darting in between, and you got inexperienced drivers picking up their younger siblings, I mean, it's a nightmare. But even tonight, just quietly walking, first of all, that whole front entrance of the high school has settled in all sorts of ways that maybe it looks like we had an earthquake here, and it's just an accident waiting to happen. You have hundreds of people in and out of that building, okay? That's like sprained ankle city. It's really bad. But so if you can get through that landmine and you can get to your car, and my car was just right past that little circle on the other side, it was pitch black. And even the rest of the other part of the parking lot, it was pitch black. And it just, I don't understand. I was looking like, is there a light that I'm not seeing? Maybe something's broken. But I know I talked about this and brought this up. I know we've had changeover in staff and different things, but I know there's all this money and, you know, for capital improvements or this or that, but you have to make things safe when you have hundreds of people you know, PTA meetings, all sorts of things in the evening. So that was just something I was thinking, you know, the next time I come for that meeting on Thursday night, I'm going to wear one of my little things that I use, like for my Hurricane Sandy little headlamp thing. No, I don't want to, you know, hurt myself. It was that bad. I wouldn't, you know, it really was that bad. Just chiming in with math, I'm sort of seeing the problems of maybe what's going on in elementary school with some kids that I work with in sixth and seventh grade that I'd be happy to talk to you about, because I keep on seeing the same deficits and challenges that are very surprising and actually making it very difficult for them. So at another time, Jill, I did leave a message at your office, you know, so if you want to get back with me, I'm very happy to share that sort of anecdotal thing. But, you know, even today I had a frantic person calling me about something, but the issue that the kid actually had wasn't about sixth grade. It was something that should have gone on in elementary school. So I do really think that what you said was super important and something that you really have to look at. And on that note, I know that, you know, I had promoted IXL, and I think that that's been accepted. I know that there are teachers that give points for using it, and they seem to like doing it. And I'm wondering if that's something that in the interim you can purchase and let these elementary kids get that advantage if they're going to use it. If a kid who's motivated or parents that are motivated want to give their kids that extra practice, the IXL is a great way of doing it. When you're buying it on the classroom level, it's not that expensive. And it could be something because you're already using it and it's just bringing it down into a few more grades. And I think that could be something to immediately, you know, help that. And it's understandable math, so people could see, oh, you know, my kid isn't doing well with multiplication, throw them on IXL for 15 minutes, and, you know, it really would help. So that was my two cents about that. Thanks.
Two steps in a row. On the lighting, I'm pretty sure we have money in this year's budget for lighting for some of these parking lots from in the capital, transfer to capital for this year. So I guess it's just a matter of when we can get to those projects with everything that's going on. Any thought on where a time frame is on that?
I'm going to take a look at it. You know, so I know that we had some lighting questions in other buildings as well. So I'll take a look at that. So no, I don't have a timeline, but I certainly will look into it. Regarding the front steps of the high school, really, it's the brick that's settled, you know, there. So Mr. Ward and I have talked about that. There's some other concrete improvements that we have to take care of, but I'm wondering, you know, can we possibly make that a priority? And it's something that Mr. Ward and I have been discussing already.
Thank you.
I think the topic of the lighting at the high school, and Debbie, correct me if I'm not wrong, has been going on forever. And it is something that we have complained about and we've asked about because it's so dark. So it's just an accident waiting to happen. And we've asked about it over the years. We keep saying we want it, and we've heard something was going to happen. So if you could please check, and some things we just have to really raise up to number one.
And now, Jody, I think you want to make a comment on math.
I don't want to go into the specifics, but I do just want to comment to what Ms. Nispel said. Third grade math is the reason I'm sitting at this table today. It is what got me started. It is what opened. It is the reason why I am crazy anti-Common Core lady today. It was a really bad experience for my son, who was a math enrichment kid. You know, we had great years in first and second grade math. We had tears constantly through third grade math. And then in fourth grade, we were fine again. And that was, you know, my great math student, a child who excelled in math. Teachers were always giving him more advanced work. He was selected for enrichment. And there were units where, you know, he just put his head down on the table and just sobbed. And we couldn't help him. My sister, who was an actuary in Florida, didn't know how to help him. You know, so I don't think that her experience is much different. I'm now going through it again for the second time. And, you know, already I, too, see frustration over homework. You know, I would really, you know, and I think when you talk to other parents and you hear them say the elementary standards are developmentally inappropriate or Common Core elementary math is horrible, if you sit down and you dig, 9 times out of 10, they're probably talking about third grade as opposed to the other grades. Just, you know, again, I don't want to go into the specifics because I think she did a good job with it, but I think it's something that we really just, we need to take a look at. There are too many kids having meltdowns over homework. getting frustrated, you know, so early in the year. My son, who had the potential to be a fantastic math student, will never like math again, ever. He's done. He'll do it. He'll do well. But he's not the kind of kid who's going to enthusiastically jump into advanced math if he doesn't have to, because he still hasn't forgotten. Still hasn't forgotten. So.
Hi. Paula Barsky, 30 Cornell Drive, Plainview, New York. I'm here as co-president of SEPTA. I'm here to cordially invite you all to our SEPTA Night Out, which is November 10th at 7 o'clock, being held at Matlin Middle School. It is going to be a game show edition, so it should be lots of fun. We have fabulous raffles, a great fundraiser for SEPTA and the special ed child, so please consider attending. I have flyers and forms, and I also have little giveaways that we're giving out to all members. So please pass it around, and I hope to see you there. Thank you.
Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive in Plainview. In going over the agenda, I had expected to learn a little bit more about the capital project update. It says here bond update, and that's what you call it. These improvements have to be financed somehow, and I asked Mr. Cunningham earlier what the bond schedule is for the bonds that we have floated for this $48 million project, and I understand at this point we have not issued any bonds, and I'm a little curious where the money's coming from if we haven't sold any bond anticipation notes. The other comment I have, you know, for years I've been setting... Oh, by the way, the agenda here is very nice in that it answers a lot of the questions I generally come up here to ask. One of the things that I was encouraged by this evening was on the NISBA resolutions. This is the first time in a long time that I have seen the deliberations of the board, which are required under the Freedom of Information Act. I trust that the board from now on will be conducting more, if not all, of their deliberations in public session. Thank you.
Tracy Miniman, 126 Manor Street. I just had a question for you. Regarding the bond, I didn't see anything slated for 2016 about air conditioning. Do you know when that's going to be put in?
If you don't mind, I'm also going to answer the other bond question. With the air conditioning, one of the things that Dr. Lewis has said many times is that all instructional spaces will be air conditioned. We can't do that until we upgrade the electrical in all buildings. We can't just put them in windows and stuff like that and power them up, because we'll keep on flipping our system. So that's something that our architects, BBS, can speak more to when they're here in November. But really, we don't expect to have all instructional spaces air-conditioned until 2017.
2017. Okay. Because I know I was specifically asking about POB Middle School, because there's a lot of instructional space that's
right.
Not air-conditioned.
It's going to be 2017.
Okay. Next question with regards to that. I just went through Pasadena Elementary School's graduation. I know some of you were there. Is there any chance down the road that maybe some of the schools that don't have auditoriums could maybe have their graduations in the air-conditioned auditorium? Just a thought.
I don't know if that's been something that's been discussed previously here.
I think we're actually in the bond. I'm not going to swear I'm 100% correct, but I'm pretty sure the instruction, the spaces, those gym spaces that are on the other side of the cafeteria are set to be air conditioned as part of the bond project. But once again, that's going to take electricity, and if we can't power them properly, we can't put them in.
Because the one thing, and now I'm speaking on behalf of the PTA board, I know it was talked about that in terms of the air conditioning, you know, it was extremely hot in there. But then also the slideshow didn't work out very well because it was in the gym and it was all light, so it didn't get dark enough to watch it, so you kind of just lost the effect. I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah. Okay, and then relating to Beth with her comment, I actually experienced it tonight, and I didn't think I was going to experience it with my first grader. I had already gone through math tiers and everything with my fifth grader, but now to go through it again, my first grader, who is, you know, very intelligent, and I think it just depends where you come from. He just came from kindergarten. Every kindergarten teacher is so very different. His kindergarten teacher had the philosophy, well, we need to wait until the whole class is caught up before moving on. Then you have those kids that do not get a chance to move on. And when he graduated, he was just starting to do addition and subtraction, whereas others were doing it for months. I know that are probably all going to change when kindergarten comes into the elementary schools. But it was only the second week of school when his homework basically had to do with, you know, these complex word problems and, you know, not only did you have to give an answer, but you had to explain why. And I was like, oh, my God, this is insane. Like, he's barely, like, reading the instructional sentence. And it's just, yeah. So even, I know you're talking about third grade, but even first grade, I'm seeing tears. I'm going to fail my test tomorrow, his first math test. He's worried. And I'm just like, oh, no, here we are again. Thank God I don't have more kids because I can't do this anymore. So... it's like, I don't know, you know, like, I don't know what to do, you know, it's just, it's tough, it is what it is, and I do see a difference in the curriculum from the first time my fifth grader was in first grade till now, so, guidance.
If I can just answer Mr. Wolfner's questions. I know on the board docket it says bond update, but if you look at the first slide of each of my presentations, it says bond referendum and capital improvements projects update. And I don't do that to be misleading, but some of the things we're talking about are actually bond projects, and some are funded out of the capital reserve. So there you have two recent capital reserves, each of $5 million. One, voters authorized expenditure out of this past May, and we spent that down. We went through about $5 million. And that's not something we're going to borrow. There's also another $5 million capital reserve that voters authorized this year, and we'll probably seek to look for authorization to expend that next May. So we don't borrow for those things. By voter approval, we have that. Bond projects, we can't borrow for until we have SED approval for them. And then we're going through the process of analyzing through cash flow how long can we go before we actually have to borrow. We won't be able to go out and bond $40, $46 million right off the bat. So that's going to introduce the process of going out for bond anticipatory notes, otherwise known as bands. We'll probably go through two bands because each band lasts, we can go for a year on, but once again, we can't go out for that band money until the projects are approved by SED, and that's taking time to get them approved. So we're looking to see what we can rack up in the approval column, including next summer's work, before we go out for the first band, because we have to determine what size we go for, and then we'll be in that same mode probably the fall of 2016, going out for a second band, before we roll that all up into one final bond, which perhaps could be less than voters actually approved if we're successful in coming in under budget in our projects. But that's 2 years down the road for us to see.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for a new business? Ginger? Lauren? Hold separations? I have a separation, 7.5, name Batan.
Sorry, you said new business?
Routine business. I have almost the whole year to get this straight, you know. Okay, so separate 7.5 Nabatan. So all those in favor of everything but 7.5 Nabatan. All right. Motion on 7.5 just Batan. Debbie, Emily, all those in favor, all those against, abstaining. Now, do we have a motion for new business? Wait. Unfinished business, adoption of board goals. Emily, Debbie, any further discussions? All those in favor, we have goals. We will get them posted on the district website as soon as we can. New business, that the Board of Education approve the Project Challenge field trip walking tour of the Brooklyn Bridge on May 9, 2016. Ginger, Lauren, discussion? All those in favor? Okay. The proposed resolutions for NISBA's annual convention per the changes that we all discussed at length earlier. Seth, Debbie, further discussions? All those in favor? Additional staff development proposals, 2015-16. Debbie, Ginger, discussions? All those in favor? Okay. The Board of Education approved field trips for the music department with various dates. Ginger? Lauren, discussions? All those in favor? Okay, upgrade school store club at POB Middle School to a level 2 club. Ginger, Seth, discussions? All those in favor? Hardship waiver resolution. Well, we got to get a motion and then we'll... Yeah. Okay. Ginger, Debbie, discussion? I think we'll explain that a little bit. Vince?
So the hardship waiver resolution is part of the APPR 3012D, which school districts are required to negotiate a new APPR agreement with administrators and teachers. We're given to November 15th to have an approved plan. However, if for various reasons you're unable to do that, you file a hardship waiver, which most districts are doing now. One of those reasons could be that there are supplemental assessments that you could use. However, the state hasn't provided us with the approved assessments yet. So since you can't negotiate something you don't know that's been approved, it's tough to negotiate something. So that would be one reason for applying for a waiver. There are multiple others that you could have also. So this resolution will be part of the evidence presented for our waiver to operate under 3012C as opposed to the new 3012D until such time as an agreement is reached.
All those in favor? Standard work day and reporting resolution for elected and appointed officials. Motion? Somebody? Emily? Seth? Discussion? All those in favor? Motion to go into executive session for matters of personnel. Emily? Seth? All those in favor? Thank you very much. We'll see you in 3 weeks, right? That's a while. In 3 weeks.